Welcome to the E*TRADE Financial First Quarter 2010 Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. Following the formal remarks, we will open the call for Q&A. At that time, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. If your question has been answered, or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Thank you. It is now my pleasure to turn the floor over to Susan Hickey from E*TRADE Financial. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for E*TRADE Financial's First Quarter 2010 Conference Call. Joining me today are Stephen Freiberg, E*TRADE's Chief Executive Officer, Bruce Noah, our Chief Financial Officer, and other members of E*TRADE's management team. Before turning the call over to Steve, I'd like to remind everyone that during this conference call, the company will be sharing with you certain projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or its future performance. E*TRADE Financial cautions you that certain factors, including risks and uncertainties, referred to in the 10-Ks, 10-Qs, and other documents E*TRADE files with the Securities and Exchange Commission, could cause the company's actual results to differ materially from those indicated by its projection or forward-looking statement. This call will present information as of April 21, 2010. Please note that E*TRADE Financial disclaims any duty to update any forward-looking statements made in the presentation. During this call, E*TRADE Financial may also discuss some non-GAAP financial measures in talking about its performance. These measures will be reconciled to GAAP either during the course of the call or in the company's press release, which can be found on its website at investor.etrade.com. This call will be recorded. Replay of this call will be available via phone, webcast, and podcast beginning today at approximately 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The call is being webcast live at investor.etrade.com, and no other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. And with that, I will now turn the call over to Steve Freiberg.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I'm pleased to be participating in my first call as E*TRADE's Chief Executive Officer. To begin today's call, I would like to share a few thoughts, and then Bruce will take you through the first quarter results. From there, I will add a few closing comments before we take your questions. I have had a very busy and exciting first few weeks at E*TRADE, learning more about the company, our people, and our customers. This is a pivotal time for the company, and I'm energized by the opportunity to lead the organization through its next phase of growth and innovation. My predecessors, Bob Druskin and Don Layton, the senior management team, and really the entire organization, navigated the company through very challenging times, and today, with a solid brokerage business, complemented by an improving balance sheet and a strengthened capital structure, E*TRADE is well positioned for growth and profitability. I was attracted to the CEO role at E*TRADE for a number of reasons. I am a builder of businesses, and I look forward to working with the team to build on the company's current momentum. In addition, I believe E*TRADE's focus on expanding customer relationships, both with active traders and long-term investors, aligns well with my experience in building consumer franchises. Through enhanced value propositions, customer segmentation, product innovation, and world-class customer service. E*TRADE remains a respected company with a powerful financial services brand, and as I spend time with our company and our people, I am even more confident about E*TRADE's opportunity to reach its full potential, and I look forward to engaging with you on our progress. As Bruce will describe, E*TRADE's first quarter performance exhibits several positive trends. Earnings are headed in the right direction. Our retail brokerage business continues to compete effectively. Balance levels in our loan portfolio declined at a consistent rate with improving delinquency metrics. And for the first time in 2 years, E*TRADE Bank internally generated rather than used capital. These trends provide us with the flexibility to make investments that will drive our continued leadership as a trading and investing platform and our ongoing expansion in the long-term investor segment. And with that brief introduction, I will turn the call over to Bruce.
Thank you, Steve. We are pleased with our quarterly financial performance and the progress we continue to make in building out a comprehensive product and service offering that supports the needs of a broad range of investors. Before summarizing our financial results, I will review a few highlights of the quarter. On the product side, a number of new customer offerings and enhancements were introduced. For long-term investors, E-Trade Capital Management introduced managed investment portfolios with a competitive fee structure and an accessible entry point of only $25,000. And Power E-Trade Pro users now have access to an expanded feature set, including streaming CNBC broadcasts. In addition, E-Trade Mobile Pro for the new iPad was recently released, and we are proud that Apple highlighted our application on its download site and during its media briefings throughout the launch. We continue to lead the industry with tools that support today's increasingly mobile investor. During the quarter, we also simplified our fee structure to enhance our value proposition to customers. We eliminated the $12.99 pricing tier, as well as incremental commissions that applied to certain trades. And effective in the second quarter, we are eliminating all of our account inactivity fees. We expect that these changes will reduce our revenue by approximately $50 million in 2010, but view the changes as an investment in customer satisfaction that we believe will reduce attrition rates over the long term. We were gratified that Barron's recognized our comprehensive customer experience in its 2010 annual online broker survey. Barron's awarded E-Trade Securities 4 out of 5 stars, described us as a one-stop shopping destination, highlighted our mobile trading technology, and listed us among the best firms for long-term investing. Turning to our financial results, the company had a net loss of $48 million, or 2 cents per share during the quarter, which compares with a net loss of $67 million, or 4 cents per share in the prior quarter, and a loss of $233 million, or 41 cents per share, in the first quarter of 2009. During the quarter, we generated $537 million of net revenue, which is an increase of $13 million from the prior quarter and an increase of $39 million, or 8%, from the same quarter a year ago. Our revenue this quarter included net interest income of $320 million, which was essentially flat compared with last quarter. This reflected a net interest spread of 2.96% on average interest-earning assets of $42.4 billion. Therefore, while average interest-earning assets declined by $1.4 billion, a 10-basis point expansion in interest income spread allowed us to maintain a consistent level of net interest income. Commissions, fees and service charges, principal transactions, and other revenue in the first quarter were $196 million. This was a 5% sequential decline compared with the fourth quarter, which reflected lower retail trading activity as well as a 10-cent decline in the average commission per trade. The decline in the average commission included the impact of our recent pricing changes, which was partially offset by a more favorable customer mix this quarter. We enjoyed increased principal transactions this quarter in our market-making business. They were up $3 million from the prior quarter and $9 million from the prior year. Our revenue this quarter also included $29 million of net gains on loans and securities. This net gain was greater than the $9 million of impairments during the quarter. Our total operating expense for the first quarter declined from the prior quarter by $23 million to $295 million. This included lower compensation, real estate-owned, bad debt, and restructuring expenses, which more than offset higher seasonal spending for advertising and market development. Our operating expense declined 4% compared with the first quarter of 2009 if we exclude FDIC insurance premiums and restructuring activities during both periods. We are well on the way toward completing our previously announced plan to restructure our international operations. We are exiting local market trading operations, but will continue to offer customers residing outside of the U.S. the ability to trade in U.S. securities. We completed the sale of our German operation at the end of last year, and in April, we consummated the sales of our local Nordic and UK businesses. During the quarter, we recorded $3.4 million in international restructuring charges. Over the next two quarters, we expect to record approximately $1 million in restructuring charges, including a $3 million credit during the second quarter and a $4 million charge during the third quarter. The restructuring charges are lower than previously expected due to a gain on the sale of the UK business and lower than anticipated costs. With our restructuring largely completed, we will focus on U.S. metrics going forward, as the international local activity will be phasing out over the next few quarters. DARTs for our U.S. operations were 155,000 during the first quarter, which is down 2% from the prior quarter and 11% compared with the first quarter of 2009, a period of significant market volatility. Brokerage accounts were up 2,000, and we ended the quarter with 2.6 million accounts. Net new asset flows into our U.S. brokerage business were a positive $2.2 billion during the quarter. Therefore, while the total number of brokerage accounts remained relatively constant, we believe the generation of net new assets indicates higher quality customer accounts. Customer assets in the U.S. were $159 billion at quarter end. Net new assets were a positive $400 million during the quarter, with the increase in brokerage assets more than offsetting the planned decline in customer bank assets. Brokerage customer cash increased by $1.4 billion to $21.8 billion, while bank customer cash declined by $1.8 billion, including the sale of approximately $1 billion of savings accounts to Discover. Customer margin receivables in the U.S. grew by 5% during the quarter and ended at $3.8 billion. This represented a 67% increase from a year ago. Turning to the balance sheet, we made continued progress in the runoff of our loan portfolio, with total loans declining by $1 billion during the quarter. Our loan loss provision declined for the sixth consecutive quarter, from $292 million in the prior quarter to $268 million this quarter. Net charge-offs were $288 million, which was a $36 million decrease from the prior quarter. Because our provision was less than our charge-offs this quarter, our loan loss allowance declined by $20 million. Our loan loss reserve continues to be approximately $1.2 billion, which is equal to 6% of total loans. Delinquency trends continue to improve, with quarter-over-quarter total special mention delinquencies declining by 4% and total at-risk delinquencies declining by 8%. We continue to be pleased with the impact that our loan modification program is having on our credit exposure and comfortable with our provisioning. As Steve highlighted earlier, we were extremely pleased that the bank generated $48 million in regulatory risk-based capital during the quarter. And while we may not generate capital in every quarter, we do expect that the bank will generate capital for the full year 2010, marking a key milestone in our return to financial strength. Our bank capital ratios continue to be substantially in excess of regulatory well-capitalized thresholds. As of March 31, the Tier 1 capital ratio was 6.83% to total adjusted assets and 13.08% to risk-weighted assets. Our sale of the savings accounts in particular allowed us to free up approximately $50 million in Tier 1 capital. We also ended the quarter with $947 million of risk-based total capital in excess of the level that our regulators define as well-capitalized. We ended the quarter with $418 million in corporate cash, an increase of approximately $25 million from the prior quarter. We expect to receive during the second or third quarter a tax refund of approximately $100 million related to the legislation in 2009 that extended net operating loss carrybacks to 5 years. We expect that the parent company will retain $95 million of this cash, with the remaining $5 million going to the bank. Given our improving financial position, we plan to pay cash for the May coupon on our springing lien notes, although we will consider this decision more specifically as we approach the interest payment date. Finally, I would like to highlight a change that we are making in our financial reporting this quarter. In addition to the trading and investing and the balance sheet management segments, we are now providing increased visibility into our corporate expenses with the introduction of a new corporate segment. This new corporate segment includes unallocated expenses for finance, legal, human resource, and risk management functions, as well as corporate interest expense. In summary, we believe that our first quarter results demonstrate the strength in our core retail franchise and continued improvement in our overall financial condition. We welcome Steve to the organization and look forward to his leadership as we focus on growth and profitability. And with that, I will turn the call back to Steve for closing remarks.
Thank you, Bruce. Before opening the call for questions, let me share a few additional comments. Clearly, we are on the right track in both our brokerage business and in our legacy loan portfolio, and I am committed to continuing this positive trend. As we generate capital and move towards profitability, our challenge is to invest in and grow our core brokerage business, manage legacy risk, and identify and prioritize opportunities for enhancing growth. I welcome this challenge, and I am certain that the rest of our management team does too. And although it is still early days for me, I have several thoughts about E-Trade's future. These include that we build on our heritage and strength as a technology leader to develop and or embrace the next set of disruptive innovations. Further leverage rapidly evolving research, segmentation, and decision science tools to drive more effective customer acquisition and retention, and to expand customer relationships, particularly in the long-term investor segment. Enhance our product suite and customer interaction models to better serve our active trader and long-term investor segments, and continue to support our brand and extend it more fully. Not surprisingly, these themes support our strategy to extend our leadership in the active trader segment while continuing to expand our relationships with long-term investors. I look forward to the coming weeks and months as we develop and execute plans for E-Trade's next stage of growth. And as I said earlier, I look forward to engaging with you on our progress. With that, operator, we are ready to take questions.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. We do ask that while you pose your question, you pick up your handset to allow optimal sound quality. Thank you. Our first question comes from William Tenona of Collins Stewart.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Bruce. Or I should say good evening. Question on delinquencies, particularly the 1-4. I was surprised to see that the early stage delinquencies have actually stayed flat here for, it looks like, the last 2 to 3 quarters. I was also, I guess, surprised to see the later stage delinquencies increase here. It just seems like it's a trend that is not necessarily consistent with some of the other financial services companies that we've seen report as of late.
This is Bruce, and one thing to remind everyone is that for first lien delinquencies, we have a month lag, and so it's really the statistics for us is through February, and some of the ones you may be comparing may be through March. Overall, we're very happy with the stabilization we're seeing in delinquencies, and we expect the trends to continue, and additional information we have since the February time period would reinforce that belief.
Okay. And then in terms of the $1 billion, in terms of loan reductions there, you mentioned that $700 million was principal reductions as well as prepayments. Can you kind of quantify the difference between prepayments and principal reductions, and then specifically how much of that is modifications?
In terms of prepayments, it's the lion's share of the reduction that's in the $700 million, a very small amount of actual maturities.
Okay. And in terms of the $47 million of risk-based capital that was created as a result of changes that took place on the risk-weighted assets, can you help me understand exactly what changes took place to free up that capital?
The primary change would be as the loan portfolio pays down, so that's reduced. The money is reinvested in agency securities, so it's that difference in the risk weighting, which is a major part of it. In addition, we were able to use more of our deferred tax asset this quarter, and then just the relationship of the profitability of the bank versus the loan loss provision is more favorable than it had been.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Roger Freeman of Barclays.
Hi, thanks. I guess first, your comment on the dropping the fees for inactive accounts, can you just help us think about that a little bit more? I understand you want to, I guess you're looking to those as possible sources of, I guess, re-engagement at a later point, but as you think about sort of your balance sheet, shrinkage objectives and the cash that's in those accounts that you have to hold capital against, does that counter at all some of your near-term priorities?
No, the inactivity fee we found was just one of the primary customer dissatisfiers, and it was an irritant, and we wanted to make sure that we're doing everything we can to retain our accounts and not have anything that would be a dissatisfier to them. And that will be the lion's share, or not lion's, but the majority of the $50 million will actually be that inactivity fee. And so then you'll see that coming in starting the second quarter. But it's part of our overall strategy to focus on our online brokerage business and to grow our customer accounts and the quality of accounts.
What's the profitability of an inactive client that doesn't use any of your services, doesn't trade? Will there be a specific action to re-engage them?
Sure, and the tendency is that often a account goes inactive for a period, and they can be reactivated in terms of their level of engagement with us. And it affects not only the inactive ones. It's just a perception that we found that even some of our very best customers had a perception that we had something that was not consistent with the other competitors in the online industry. And so just from a customer perception standpoint, that has a benefit as well.
Got it. Okay. And then on the provision for loan loss, you might have said this, I might have missed it. Why did it pick up in the HELOC portfolio so much in the quarter?
Right. Yeah. The way it works is that the provisioning is based on your actual experience, and then you forecast on that basis. And it so happens that this quarter, the loan modification program was more skewed toward home equity than toward our first lien. I'm sorry, I reversed that. More for first lien and less home equity. And the home equity went down because we were putting in some operational changes, and that had the effect of reducing that activity during the quarter. And first liens is an area that we have been gradually increasing. So that effect creates a disproportion compared to what had been the experience, and that flows through your loan provisioning. Since that time, we've returned to more normalized mix of loan modifications, including an increase in home equity modifications. And therefore, going forward, We fully expect, starting with the second quarter, to be back to a normalized provisioning, and you'll see home equity and first lien return to their more normal trends. And overall, we expect that the provisioning for the year will not differ from where we began with our expectations.
Okay, but I guess, does that mean that the last few quarters, the decline in provisioning has really been more just a function of modifying loans and some pushing out the...
No, it's really the function of the change. And we in our analysis, conclude that although you have some differences in the absolute amounts of provisioning, in terms of the trends, that it doesn't have an impact on provisioning or on the delinquencies.
Okay, last question quickly. Customer mix, you made a comment it was more favorable this quarter. What was that in reference to?
Yeah, the primary one was that we had more transactions in our corporate services group, which is in the stock plan administration, and it's more exercises of restricted stock that they sell the stock into the market, and that's a higher profitable trade.
Oh, interesting. Do you think that's going to end up being a seasonal thing, particularly with more restricted stock being...
Yeah, that probably is something that more and more will take into account, that there does seem to be more restricted stock that vests in the first quarter, and people are tending to sell their stock when it vests. The other one in the mix I'd mention is we had an uptick in options as well, which is another favorable.
Yep. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Yep.
Your next question comes from Rich Repetto of Sandler O'Neill.
Yeah, good evening, and welcome, Steve. Hopefully you're coming in at an upswing here, for sure.
Thanks, Rich.
I guess to follow up on this, on the question that Roger asked, on the provisioning, to be blunt, I don't fully understand, because I see you over-provided, even though the charge-offs in home equity have sort of continued down, you know, on a trend downward. So I guess would you expect charge-offs later on because of these modifications to increase?
Rich, what I'll suggest is have Paul Brandau, our chief risk officer, elaborate further and just see what color he can add.
Yeah, I'll give you an explanation now, and then maybe if you have some questions later on for Brett, we can handle them there. But this is really an effect of the interplay between the two different reserves that are involved with loans, the FAS 5 reserve and the one that's specific to TDRs. The way we do a forecast, right, we need to make an assessment of the amount of modifications that are going to be done, which would in turn then create the FAS, both the FAS 5 and the TDR and the FAS 114 reserve. Because modifications for home equity were lower in the first quarter, and since our forecasting is based on our most recent experience, that tended to leave more of our loans in the non-modified state, which would be showing up in higher FAS 5 reserves. Since we now have returned to a much more normal level of home equity loans, we expect that effect, in effect, to dissolve over the next quarter or two, and so that by the end of the year, assuming again that the modification activity stays at what is now the returned higher pace, it should return to what we expected at the beginning of the year.
Okay. We certainly can spend some time offline going through that. But moving on, the expenses, you know, nice reduction quarterly, sequentially in expenses. And, Bruce, the other line came down dramatically, you know, from, I think, 38 to $21 million. Could you give us a color what, you know, the what was going in that line and why it came down?
Yeah, there are a couple things. One is you had a lower REO expense. That occurred, and that's because of stabilization of home prices had a favorable impact on that expense line. And then bad debts that the fourth quarter of 2009, there was an abnormally high amount of charges that went through that line, and we're back to normal bad debt levels.
Gotcha. Okay. And the very last question, you know, the focus on the core brokerage, and you know, everybody know that has been the strength here with the company through the the downswing, the economic downswing. We did take, I guess the question is, there was, you know, a sort of an uptick in attrition. There was a net, you know, net loss of accounts in March. And I was just trying to see, and I'm also looking back at the prior, you know, quarter. It looks like the accounts are different than in the last press release. So is there some accounting thing going on with the brokerage accounts, or and what do you attribute the attrition in March to?
Sure. In March, you have the inactivity fee comes in, so you typically would find that that would have an impact in the last month of the quarter. And as we discussed a little earlier, in some ways, this is getting rid of the less valuable accounts. And so more and more, what we look at is the overall quality of the accounts. And that's, for our point of view, the best metric is the $2.2 billion of net new assets that came in. And so while we want to grow the number of accounts, we are probably even more focused on the net new assets. And and because of things like inactivity fees and other factors, you'll have changes that we should help going forward.
And just on the accounting, I'm looking at the last press release that said 2.7 million brokerage accounts. Was there a change?
Yeah, the change was that, as I mentioned, we were going to focus on U.S. metrics going forward, and so we're excluding the international local accounts. And so we're trying to be apples to apples. And going forward, it should get a little less confusing. But for a while, we're going through the transition.
Understood. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Keith Walsh of Citi.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Or good evening, sorry. I'm getting a little confused here. First for Bruce, just opportunity for more loan sales. And specifically, what's the gap you're seeing these days around the market value versus what you've marked these loans to, and then I've got a couple follow-ups.
Yeah, rather than quote specific prices, I would say that we continue to monitor the market, and what we see are the prices in the secondary market are still below the intrinsic value, and so we do not see the potential to do anything material in terms of additional loan sales.
I mean, what's the trend on that gap, though? What have we been seeing over the last, you know, 6 to 8 months?
I think with that additional caller, I'll call on Bob Burton, who is the president of the E-Trade Bank, to comment.
We are seeing some narrowing of that difference between what we believe the intrinsic value is in the market, and we are looking, for example, to take advantage of opportunities to potentially securitize some of the loans in the portfolio, but we still think there's a ways to go before that gap narrows to the point where we would even contemplate additional sales.
Okay, and then second question for Bruce. Maybe if you could just remind us, you know, upward movement on short-term rates, why your two larger competitors, it has positive EPS leverage, and for you guys, it's actually slightly negative.
Yeah, I can't comment on the balance sheet of the competitors, but for us, we manage the balance sheet to be neutral in terms of the impact of interest rate movements. And even since last quarter, we've become more neutral. So with a change in short-term rates at this point, we don't see any effect on our interest income. And that's a combination of just the way that the mix of assets and liabilities are constructed, as well as hedging activities, which the people in our bank treasury department manage.
Okay, and then the third question, just for Stephen, just around, you know, strategy here. You know, what attracted you to this job specifically, and what do you view as your immediate priorities as we move throughout 2010? Thanks.
Keith, just to frame it, one, that the industry at large, which essentially is the brokerage and financial services, has always been an interest of mine, and I've spent 10 out of my 30 years on that side of the house, and I've always basically enjoyed it and enjoyed basically building franchises within the category. Secondarily, E-Trade in particular, as I said earlier, is at a pivotal point, and I've spent also a good part of my career in turnarounds, and I'm very optimistic at this point about the opportunity that E-Trade specifically presents. I also enjoy consumer-oriented franchises, We've got a terrific brand, a very strong core business. We have potential to expand that core business into other segments that I think hold significant potential. And we have to work through, as it's clearly evident, some of the challenges of the past, which is, in fact, the legacy asset book. And so we can't lose sight, or we can't basically let up the vigilance around that. So, you know, that in itself, and again, just to remind the group, it's been all of about 3 weeks, so that beginning to get a better understanding of both the opportunities, the issues, and the risks associated with the franchise. But on balance, I couldn't think of a better company at a better time to join.
Great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Matt Snowing of FBR Capital Markets.
Hi, good evening. Just, maybe a question on the net interest margin. It came in a little higher than we were looking for. Is that just simply, you know, the effect of redeploying the cash on the balance sheet at, in higher rates, or higher rate securities?
Sure. There's really three reasons. One is, as you mentioned, that we were able to put more cash into securities. Secondly, we have a higher margin balance, which is very much a lucrative balance. And third is the mix of our deposits. It became more skewed toward brokerage cash rather than bank cash, and that in turn lowers our cost of funding, which gets translated into a higher margin.
Okay. And maybe going back to your interest rate sensitivity, you mentioned you were neutral right now.
Yeah.
To rates, but is the model itself still asset sensitive in that, and you've just hedged out some of that sensitivity in the near term?
I tell you, again, I think this is one I'll call on Bob Burton, who is the president of the bank, to explain further about how we manage that.
Yeah, in general, although we certainly engage in hedging activity to customize our position, the balance sheet is generally moving closer and closer to neutral as the loan portfolio pays off. And so we have the risk generated by the loan portfolio and by our securities portfolio offset by the value creation as interest rates move from our large, you know, internal deposit base. So as a rule, it leans toward being basically neutral.
Does that assume that you reprice your deposits in line with rising rates?
Well, it certainly makes, there's certainly a series of assumptions we have to make about how sensitive our deposits are to moving.
Okay.
And we use historical numbers to look at that.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Michael Carrier of Deutsche Bank.
Thanks. Just a question on the net new brokerage accounts. You had this quarter, you know, a little less than 2,000. Last quarter was negative. Just trying to figure it out, because in the industry, you know, when you look at some of your peers, they're showing, you know, two-year highs in terms of, you know, net new brokerage accounts and organic growth. I know when I look at your, you know, your spending on the marketing, it's a little bit lower, but just trying to understand if there's anything else, you know, going on there in terms of the new growth.
Two comments I'd make. One is that if you recall, in January we had some achievement, and so 6,000 accounts were eliminated through that process, and that was not something that was in prior quarters if you compare. And secondly is that we find that new accounts are very largely correlated with volatility. And so this is a period of lower volatility, and I just would comment that already when you've seen some increase in the market volatility, that we can see the impact from that immediately, and so that's something that probably is a more telling factor in the slower growth.
Okay, and then second one is just on the outlook for the commissions and the in active fees. If I look at the $50 million that you're projecting for the year, just trying to understand how much of that was in, you know, the first quarter versus going
on. Sure. Yeah. The first quarter, the impact was about $4 million. And for the next three quarters, it'll be $15 million about per quarter, which gets you up to the $50
million. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Your next question comes from Mike Vincicata of BMO Capital Markets.
Thank you. Just following up on Mike's question there on the commission rate, you did say that the majority of the lost $50 million is going to come from the inactivity fees, right? So there's not going to be much of an impact on that, the commission rate itself.
I'll give you a feel for that. For the quarter, we estimate that it was about a 33-cent impact, and again, that was offset to a large degree by mix. And going forward, that would be more in the range of about 50 cents.
Okay, great. And then the corporate services side, I mean, as stock prices have risen, certainly more people have incentive to sell restricted stock if it's vested. So does that help to support potentially more activity from that segment?
Sure. Yeah. And I'm going to have Mike Curcio, who is the head of our brokerage operations and also corporate services, reports to him, so maybe he can add some color.
Absolutely. As markets have come up and individual stocks have come up, there's become more and more value in options, and we see a lift in DARTs through the corporate service channel because more options are exercised, more restricted stock is sold, and that's a positive variance on our commissions because the commissions are much higher than the rack rate.
Great. Thank you, Mike. And then just one other thing, Bruce, on the net interest margins that you didn't mention as far as the lift in the quarter. I noticed your repo rates fell pretty substantially. Is this reflective of tighter credit spreads in the marketplace, or how did that kind of come about? It's pretty significant quarter over quarter.
Yeah. Again, this is one I'm going to refer to Bob Burton.
Certainly some of it is related to the market, but in addition, early last year, we locked in a lot of longer-term repo arrangements that are expiring, and as they expire, we've been able to reduce our cost of repo.
Great. So that sounds like it's a sustainable level now at these in the low twos now.
That's what we would expect.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Howard Chen of Credit Suisse.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
Steve, your commentary was pretty constructive on the outlook for the organic growth of the franchise. I'm just curious, as the new CEO, you know, thoughts on the feasibility and appetite of a strategic sale of the franchise?
We expected that question would come up. let me just emphasize, Howard, and I do appreciate the question, that we have a thriving online brokerage business. We've strengthened our financial position, and I believe we have the opportunity to grow and prosper as a standalone company. And I think that sums it up.
Okay, thanks. Just wanted to hear it from you. And then second, any latest thoughts on what the appropriate size of the balance sheet and balance sheet composition is for the longer-term franchise?
Just to reiterate, it's been, all of 3 weeks. I think the trend that the business has followed to this point is correct, which essentially is a combination of reducing the legacy at-risk assets, de-risking the company on a whole host of fronts. And as we develop a broader, longer-term strategic plan for the company, which is part of one of my near-end priorities, I think that'll be a derivative of the plan overall. So it'll be a combination of relative size, diversification of the franchise, level of risk that we're willing to take on with an expectation of kind of earnings and returns. So it's very early to give you an absolute outside the context of a broader set of strategies, but that is a high priority for all of us so that we can frame essentially the future of this company.
Okay, great, thanks. And then final question, loan portfolio seems to be running off, credit behaving as you expect or better than expected. I guess as the environment becomes more normal, just any broad thoughts on when that inflection point in franchise profitability happens?
At this point, we're not predicting it. As I'll just emphasize that, the trends have been positive, and we expect, as you've described it, those broad macro trends to continue. And within that frame, we believe that we can continue to produce the positive results, the positive trend. But predicting precisely when we would cross the profitability is something we would not really provide at this point.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for taking my questions.
Your next question comes from Joel Jeffrey of KBW.
Just a quick question.
I think you said earlier that most of the rundown in the loan portfolio was due to prepayments. Now, if we get into a higher rate environment, do you continue to see that trend as being sustainable?
You want to comment on that, Bob? Yeah, Bob Burton?
Sure. You know, certainly we continue to expect that we'll continue to see prepayments. Obviously, you know, we're going to move with the industry, and to the extent that prepayments slow, we expect to see that. However, remember that our portfolio is older, we think there's a constant benefit across a number of factors in that age that's going to help us.
Okay, great. And it looked like advertising was up quarter on quarter, and typically seasonally up in the first quarter of the year. But given your new sort of heavy focus on the brokerage side of the business, is this an elevated trend we could continue to see, or do you think it'll sort of resort back to more traditional seasonal levels?
Well, what we said at the beginning of the year is we expected the overall spending on advertising and market development to be roughly equal, just modestly above 2009, and that continues to be what we expect. But we are having a more broadly spaced throughout the year than we did last year.
Okay, great. And then just lastly, in terms of your working capital needs, how much sort of working capital you guys need to run the business on an annual basis?
Well, in terms of the brokerage company, it's in connection with the bank as well, and maybe I can answer it that way, that we look at $1 to $2 billion of cash that we would maintain in the bank, and that would be the level, and we're slightly above that amount right now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Daniel Harris of Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good evening, guys. One of the things I wanted to touch on was the market-making business. It looks like the shares that you're trading are going well, way up, and obviously it was a difficult market for market-making in the quarter with volatility declining. But how do you see that that part of your business moving going forward?
Yeah, this is a really good story. As I mentioned, the transactions are up, and so with that, I'm going to let Mike Curcio, supervises this business as well, maybe elaborate on what is a real gem for us right now.
Yeah, sure, Bruce. We're seeing some really good trends now that we're past our crisis, and we invested in our business, making it more automation in all the NMS stocks. We're getting a lot more external customers, so that's really where you're seeing the growth, especially in the bulletin boards. But we've also seen a nice lift in the NMS business as well, and we feel that trend will continue as long as market conditions are the way they are, and they could even increase if we get more volatility. So we're very excited about that business.
Okay, and sort of on a similar vein, can you sort of remind us what are the obligations and opportunities you guys have to increase payment for order flow as we move further away from some of the things that have occurred over the last few years?
Well, as you know, the agreement that we have with Citadel expires at the end of the year, and we will be looking at alternatives for the order flow, and we'll be comparing different alternatives and obviously need to make a decision before then, but at this point, don't have anything to report.
Okay. And then just lastly, I know that there was some moving parts in the first mortgage and the HELOC book on the provision rates, but, you know, in terms of the first mortgage portfolio, you know, we're starting to see some stabilization in the charge-offs. You know, I don't know where, obviously, the number goes next quarter, but we were trending that you were building the reserves prior to this quarter, and you said that probably flip-flops next quarter. I mean, at what point do you think you start releasing reserves in that first lien portfolio, and are you seeing any signs that would actually lead you to think that that's sooner rather than later?
Again, Paul Brandao, Chief Risk Officer, response.
Yeah, I think you actually almost answered my question for me. We agree the trends in the home equity portfolio have been more favorable than the first lien, but first lien also has declined quite consistently over the past 12 months at a slower pace than home equity because, as we've mentioned before, it's a less seasoned portfolio, and furthermore, we had first mortgages with relatively low LTVs, and it's taken a longer time for some of those to become delinquent. Having said that, we would expect the positive trend to continue, perhaps at this more moderate pace that we've seen over the past few months. But to the point that was mentioned before, in the quarter, the special mention delinquencies were more or less flat, but there were improvements in the roll rates in other categories. And actually, we did see
more significant declines in the later stage buckets. So, again, we won't predict when exactly that means that we would flip, but we're pretty confident that's coming not too far away.
But so the big provision build that you, or the big reserve build that you had in the fourth quarter, that, you know, probably shouldn't expect anything much more than that given the trends we're seeing and maybe getting better, as that's as far as I understand what you're saying. So thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Faye Elliott of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon. I think I might be repeating the previous question, but I just wanted to make sure for modeling sake I understand, I guess, your philosophy on your provision and your reserve. And, it looks like your reserve to EOP loans and your reserve to NPAs is going up across categories and actually as a whole. And I guess I'm still not clear whether you're saying that you're ready to lower that provision such that these numbers can start coming down, these ratios can start coming down a little bit.
Yeah, this is Bruce. And the one thing I would say at the outset is our philosophy really isn't the governing factor, that we apply consistent procedures and a very rigorous modeling, and so I just don't want you to think that this is a subjective process. And with that, I'll let Paul respond.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to add to what Bruce said was keep in mind that we have a steadily declining portfolio, so other things being equal will drive the ratios up.
Right, but and I expect that that would be the reason, but if you have a continually declining portfolio, then would you provision less to drive those to allow those ratios to start coming down given the trends that we're seeing?
Well, I think the effect would be that, or the result would be that, but as Bruce alluded to before, our process for providing for loans and reserving for loans is based on a consistent procedure, which starts with an estimation of losses going forward based on a number of factors, including the loan level performance of our own portfolio. So yes, what you say is going to happen over time, but we get at it with a different set of analysis.
Okay. Thank you.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from Roger Freeman of Barclays.
Hi. Just a couple quick follows. On the with respect to the wholesale funding, I think there was a question earlier about where you're putting sort of maturing loans and you're buying MBS securities. What about further reduction of, say, FHLB loans, since that has a higher cost to it?
Yeah, I think we've communicated before, and I'll just make sure everyone understands that the wholesale funding, we have a couple of constraints that limit our ability to reduce that amount of funding. First, on the home loan bank loans, any reduction there would require a prepayment penalty, so essentially pulls interest costs forward, and that has a negative impact on capital. So it's something we do when we
right.
can, but it's not something we can do regularly. And then with respect to the repo financing, the constraint there is there are hedging arrangements that
right.
are associated, and that would be a pretty significant financial impact if we tried to reduce.
Well, just on that one, yeah, I know you have talked about that in the past. What's the average duration of those swap hedges on the repo portfolio? Because at some point, do those sort of run off?
Eventually, but it's a long duration.
Okay.
I by memory, it's been more like 4 or 5 years in the maturity.
Got
like 10.
Oh, okay. Got it. But just one thing on repos. I think the balance actually went. FHLB actually went up in the quarter.
I'm
2.761 versus 2.749.
This
2 million.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't much.
Yeah. I
was wondering why it would go up at all.
Our bank treasurer, any comment on that, Mike Kesey?
The home loan bank line has a certain amount that's just overnight. It's a very small amount.
Oh, okay.
Amount of intraday fluctuations there between the cash side of the balance sheet on the asset side and the funding side. And so you'll see some small amount of variability. You shouldn't expect to see any large growth.
Okay. All right.
There's definitely no change in strategy.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense. All right, just on a lighter note, would you say you've gotten more advertising benefit out of this frivolous Lohan lawsuit than any expenses?
Yeah. Well, we won't comment on that, but I would just say overall that we've got a lot of free media from the whole Super Bowl campaign that made that a very worthwhile. As a CFO, I appreciate that return on investment.
Got it. Yep. Okay, thanks.
This concludes the question and answer portion of today's call. I will now turn the conference back over to Mr. Stephen Freiberg for any closing remarks.
Okay. Thank you for joining us tonight. We feel very good about the progress we made in the first quarter, and we look forward to speaking with you again next quarter. Good evening.
Thank you. This concludes your conference. You may now disconnect.